Hello, everybody, and welcome to Risky Business 2. I'm Patrick Gray. Risky Business 2 is sponsored exclusively by Symantec. Thanks, guys. And in this edition of RB2, as we like to call it, we're taking a look at Microsoft's Office 2010 product, which isn't actually out yet. Last week, I headed to Microsoft's Tech Ed conference on the Gold Coast, and I caught up with Reid Schaffner there. He's a product manager with the Office team. And we chatted about the security features in Office 2010, the version that is going to be released, perhaps not surprisingly, in 2010. The company has put a lot of work into making sure the types of attacks that have plagued its Office suites over the last few years will be a thing of the past. Will these new measures succeed? Well, who knows? But one thing's for sure, Office 2010 on Windows 7 will most likely be a significant leap forward security-wise. Now, before we get started, I should disclose that Microsoft is a Risky Business sponsor. That said, we are not obligated or obliged in any way to provide favourable reporting on their products, and this is not a sponsored interview. It was selected purely on editorial merit. But because you're such a cynical bunch out there in the InfoSec world, I thought it was important to disclose the commercial arrangement so that you are aware of it. I started off by asking Reid what Microsoft has actually done to Office to try to improve its security.
We've introduced four different layers, the first one being Protected View, which I just showed you. And so now when you launch a document inside of Office, it runs in an isolated environment. So if you think back to 2007 where you had to say, do you want to preview this document, yes or no, launch it again, there's another preview dialogue, there's none of that, because now we're just isolating the document. In addition to that, we've added another layer, which is called Gatekeeper, which I think, as you accurately pointed out earlier, this was a feature that we had kind of as a standalone that we've now ported into the product. And what Gatekeeper is doing is we're actually looking at the definitions of files that we have on record. So if you think about all of the different binary attacks that have gone on, we basically check to see, is this a corrupt file? What have people done inside of the file?
Now, this was interesting, hey, because you guys launched that as a standalone maybe a couple of years ago. It was like a file format sanity checker. So it would go through and it would say, does this look like a properly formatted binary Office file? And I even remember seeing in advisories for Office files, like, well, we don't have a patch for this yet because it's ODAY, but you can use this tool to check and make sure that it's a conforming document. And the obvious question that came from a lot of security managers out there was, why the hell can't we just integrate that into Office and make life a lot easier?
And that's exactly what we've done, is integrated. And not just that, right? So that's kind of a great segue. And we've also integrated MoIce, so the Microsoft Office Isolated Conversion Environment, which that's kind of what Protected View is essentially based on. And so we took all of those tools and we put them into the product. And it's interesting, you bring up the zero-day attacks, right? Well, it's great because then we had that SP3 story where we just block the older file types, but now we actually get to do things with them to make the user experience a heck of a lot better. And in addition to those two, we've done some really cool stuff with things called data execution prevention, so actually stopping the code from running, so we can actually close down the app before you run into problems. And then we have another layer as well. So we've kind of built this really advanced security model, and there's a lot of documentation out there on that already today. And so I think we're pretty excited about it because we had 3 years post when we released all those tools to put, you know, we put $1 billion in R&D and every release in Office. We had 3 years to just sit there and really hammer at those models and to really make those tools strong. And I think if there's one area of the product that I think a lot of people will overlook, because a lot of end users especially take security for granted, it's something that we're particularly proud of in this release. So.
Have you actually looked over, you know, the previous attacks of the last couple of years? Because it has been an absolutely shocking run for Office bugs of late. Have you sort of done a bit of an analysis where you look at, okay, would this have succeeded? Would that have succeeded? I mean, how does it stack up in your retrospective analysis? I mean, is it completely going to eliminate the types of bugs that we've seen over the last couple of years, or is it going to mop up half of them easily? Do you have some sort of guesstimate of how effective those measures are going to be?
Anyone who works in security that would ever tell you that they're going to completely eliminate attacks doesn't know anything about security, right? There's no way that we can have the foresight to predict every type of attack that's possible. I think that we are excited that a lot of those attacks would potentially be blocked, right? And so, in fact, even with 2007, I think people look at this, we do have some statistics that show roughly, so you have 2003 compared to 2007, 76% of the attacks that applied to 2003 did not apply to 2007. And so even with the security changes that we made in 2007, which aren't nearly as large, we reduced it that much, right? So you talk about a 76% decrease in the attack vector size. And a lot of those attacks you see are on older versions. I think with this release, it'll be hard to tell, because obviously there's always the potential that someone could come up with some new attack that we've never seen, but we think that it's going to be even bigger, because take file fuzzing, for example, and we talked about this earlier, which is when you manipulate the actual binaries. We've done about 8x, so you're talking millions and millions and millions upon billions of more iterations with 2010 than we've done with any other release. And so if you just look at that vector alone, I think that we'll see huge improvements.
But yeah, have you done like a retrospective analysis and actually run those same sort of bugs? It's kind of hard. You're comparing apples and oranges, aren't
you? No, I think but that's exactly what we do, right? So we take all of those old attacks and we go, wow, okay, there was this attack. Would we block it now? And that's exactly how we method our testing. And so we've done a lot of that. We don't have the statistics to share yet. We certainly will at time of launch, and I think we'll be pretty proud of those. But it blocks a large number of those attacks that you've seen today. And the good news is every time we see one of those, we get to block them in the release that we'll have coming in 2010. So the product is by no means fixed in terms of the things that we can make in terms of security, right? We can make changes on the fly with respect to that.
I'm curious to know, if you can tell me, what proportion of the budget, I mean, excluding SDL stuff, because that's like a Microsoft-wide thing, but when we look at the actual security features, what sort of proportion of that $1 billion R&D budget would you say went into this release, and what went into, you know, to Office 2003? Like, is it more of a spend? Is it about the same? Or
it's considerably more, and it's probably worth explaining how we've restructured security at Microsoft. And I think to your point, right, there was a run there that was really painful for us, where we went and we took a step back and we said, wow, we've got to rethink the way that we address security. And so what we created was a group that's centralized at the company called TWC, Trustworthy Computing. And they're not just responsible for security, performance, stability, and accessibility. And what we did is we brought on dedicated headcount that sits at corporate, and then every team has a TWC team inside of it responsible, dev, PM, test, that runs nothing but those aspects. We've also introduced what we call the security lifecycle. And so before, you could kind of get a product out the door when you felt good about it. Now there are very rigorous guidelines that every product has to go through. In fact, if you look at the one team that can stop the product from shipping, it's the security team. And so if you look at the proportion of that investment in terms of what we've done to security, and you'll see it in the features, right? It's a considerable amount of that money. It's an area where we've done a ton of research.
It seems like you've actually built security features here. It's not actually been about writing, I mean, of course, you know, it's about writing tighter code and stuff like that, but that would probably fall outside the product development budget for Office.
No, it's both. Right, and I think that's what we learned, is there's writing the tighter code and just making the product itself more robust, but then there's adding features that are dedicated to security to allow us to do things that we couldn't do, and that's where we've been putting that R&D money into things like that.
Yeah, any idea of the sort of proportion?
Or? I don't know the exact percentage. We could probably get it for you guys and do it at a later date, but it's you take that $1 billion of R&D, right, and you're talking, like, there's no company in the world that invests more in research and a release of their product, so...
Well, let's talk about Office Online. This is sort of a situation where you have to essentially take an application and replicate the functionality in a completely different language. I mean, it's not as simple as just taking that C and running it through some special magic compiler that's going to pop it out through a web browser. This is a ground-up rebuild, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a ground-up rebuild, right? And so, but there's also a ground-up rebuild for the reasons that you don't want the thing on the web to function the same way that you want the thing on the client to function. You do in terms of look and feel, document fidelity, and features, but obviously there's a different way you're going to implement it. And I would say we've done a lot, obviously, to rebuild that, but we've done it in a way so that it's cross-browser, cross-platform, right? So we don't use ActiveX controls at all in any of our web companions. They're based in Silverlight, or we use PNG, and so you'll be able to look at that same web app, same look and feel on Firefox, on Safari, on IE, on a Mac, on an IE or on a Windows platform. And so we've really done a lot to try and address some of those issues that we can because it's running on the web. But one of the interesting things is, from a security point of view, is thinking about how do we, now you're going to have this huge mass of data moving to the web, and there's just sort of inherent security problems when you have things living in the public cloud. And so I think one of the things we're excited about is with our web apps, customers will be able to run them obviously in our BPOS infrastructure or through Windows Live, but they'll also be able to host the web applications on premises. And so you'll be able to take those web apps and run them on your SharePoint infrastructure behind your firewall with the same settings that you have have on your websites today so that you're not moving to the limitations of the cloud that are just inherently there, no matter how secure you make it. And so we're excited about that.
Yeah, well, I guess that would be a sort of nice halfway option for a lot of people, is having hosted solution that they can actually do themselves, because at least they get to implement the controls. So it makes sense. But you guys have also had a not the best run with online applications. I mean, there was the Passport snafu, which I know was several years ago now, but I mean, does a part of you as someone who's involved in risk at a technical level just sort of shudder with the idea of being responsible for so much enterprise class data out there in the cloud through this application that you've developed, which is new, you haven't put it out there yet, it hasn't withstood that torture test of being in the public domain?
Yeah, I think there's always an initial fear on some levels, right? But I think we've had a lot of experience in this space, right? I think people say, oh, Microsoft, they're new to the web game. But Office, Outlook Web Access has been there for quite a long time, right? Hotmail has been around for quite a long time. And so we've had services in the public domain. And I think there's a couple of things that we've learned. To your point, you don't want enterprise class data in the same place where consumer data is, right? It's a bad idea. And I think some people are making that mistake today and continue to. But one of the things that we're going to do with BPOS is that there's essentially multiple clouds that we're building, right, so that we can deal with that. So there's the Hotmail version with Live, right, which is the consumer version. And it's secure in the sense that it supports all of the security features you'd expect, but it is a public cloud, right, and there are inherent limitations there, as you point out. But at the same time, we're going to have the BPOS cloud, which can be dedicated. We know where the data is. We know what the infrastructure is. And then there's the private cloud concept, which is take all of those cloud services and run them on your own. And then if you want to feel comfortable with the enterprise class data, great. We'll let you do that, and you can set your own security.
So I imagine that what is this, BPOS? What's BPOS?
So BPOS stands for Business Productivity Online Services. And what
is
SharePoint, hosted Exchange, hosted OCS. Obviously, we'll move the web applications there.
Sorry, I don't speak fluent Microsoft.
Yeah, we like to make as long acronyms as we can. Microsoft Communications Server 2007 R2. We like to come up with product names. We actually find that it helps confuse people who are trying to attack our products. They just can't remember the names.
Well, I imagine there's a hell of an operational component to running like an enterprise-style cloud service. You're going to have NOCs everywhere and like IDS and like lots of guys looking at stuff coming in and out and being very paranoid. I mean, that's the idea, right?
I think we'll have a lot of people looking at that, right? I think and like I said, it's not new to us. I think people go, oh, Microsoft, they're new to this cloud game. We've been there for a while, right? And we've learned a lot, and we'll have a ton of people looking at this, and the scrutiny that we're going to put on these services is very high, right? I think if there's one thing that we've learned about the cloud is people are only going to trust it if it's secure, if it's reliable, and if every 2 months you're not saying, oh my God, there's another attack on my data, right? If you have one example on BPOS where someone loses a ton of documents or a ton of information, it's going to kill our credibility.
Well, I don't know, because that actually happened to Salesforce.com. It did. They got owned, and then a bunch of customer data got out. And then, I mean, the subsequent attack was really clever. They basically dressed up a whole bunch of invoices and started sending them off to Salesforce clients. And they were embedded with malware and all sorts of stuff. Very targeted attacks, targeting accounts departments. And yet, you know, their credibility isn't shot. They're still doing fine. They're still, you know, the player, the success story for software as a service. So it's kind of weird that, isn't it? But at the same time, I get the impression that if it was Microsoft, then you would have the credibility problem, because people tend to judge you guys by much stricter standards. I mean, is that something you agree with?
When you're the biggest person in the room, you have the biggest target on you. And I'll definitely say that. I do think that even in the Salesforce case, right, people will keep using it, but it always plants that seed of doubt, right? And so it's kind of a thing that even in our world, right, we don't want that seed of doubt to be there. We don't want to...
You reckon it probably has cost them.
I would say that what it does is even if people don't switch off, you're more hesitant, right? You become less likely to adopt the service. If it happens to us, we know it happens, right? When people attack our services, people go, well, do I need to worry now? I've read about this attack, right? As you think about consumers who don't necessarily know the nuance of the attacks, they see a story that 500,000 social security numbers have leaked or 200,000 passwords on site X. They don't necessarily understand the vector. They just know now that it's caution that they have to take. And that's not what we want, right? We want the daughter.
Internet bad, unclean.
Exactly, right? We want people to go to a website and say, you know what, I feel safe. I feel good. And I think that's why you don't want that doubt. Even if it doesn't cost us money, it costs us hearts and minds. And in some cases, that's more valuable than anything else.
So are you going to use like a nice pale, calm blue to make them feel all serene?
We're switching entirely to pastel colors.
All right, Reid Schaffner, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.